Good morning, early birds. You've caught the worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio and our friends in the public media spectrum across the Yellowstone region, bringing you the latest news of the day. I'm Carl Lengel, your host. It is the 4th of June, 2026, a Thursday. The stage is now set for Montana's November 3rd general election. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports on results of Montana's major statewide races.
One of Tuesday's most closely watched races will ultimately determine who will replace two-term Republican Senator Steve Daines. Daines' hand-picked preference, Kurt Almy, coasted to victory, garnering nearly 80% of the vote. The five-way Democratic ticket, however, drew in huge spending from outside groups in support of political unknown Alani Bankhead. In the end, she trounced former state lawmaker Riley Neal by 10 points. Neal places some of the responsibility for her loss on the Montana Press Corps.
The press establishment could have covered this candidate, done some backstory on this candidate who progressed. And I understand resources are very, very limited.
When asked if she will support the Bankhead Senate campaign, Neal responded, quote, "No, I don't think so."
I don't know her. I have not seen any evidence of her commitment to Montana or Montanans.
Aaron Flint won as the Republican candidate for the Western Congressional House District. In a statement on social media Wednesday, Flint described his nomination as the honor of a lifetime. Democrat Sam Forstag secured his nomination to challenge Flint in the Western District race. He defeated Ryan Bussey, his closest competitor, by 4 points. Forstag took to social media Wednesday to thank his supporters and reassert his support for working Montanans. Incumbent Troy Downing is the GOP candidate for the Eastern House District by default after running in an uncontested primary. Brian Miller won the Democratic contest in that district. Reporting from Missoula, I'm Edward O'Brien.
Statewide voter turnout in Tuesday's primary election was 37.3% of registered voters, according to the Secretary of State's election results. The turnout is typical for a non-presidential primary in Montana, at least over the last two decades. According to voter records, since 2002, a primary with no presidential contender has averaged approximately 35% of the state's voters. The highest voter turnout in a non-presidential primary was in 2018 at 41.6%. The lowest was in 2002 at 29%. Two federal scientists based in Montana have been charged for allegedly smuggling samples of a virus into the country earlier this year. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports.
According to charging documents, scientists Vincent Munster and Claude Quay in January were stopped at the airport in Detroit after returning from the Republic of Congo. They were carrying samples of Mpox, a virus known for causing a painful rash. The scientists were studying the latest outbreak in the African country. They work for Rocky Mountain Laboratories, a high-level research facility in the Bitterroot Valley. The lab studies infectious diseases and is overseen by the National Institute of Health. Customs officials say the researchers lied about carrying the Mpox samples into the country, calling them testing supplies. The FBI later confirmed some of the samples contained dead Mpox virus. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Michigan officially charged the scientists Tuesday. The Attorney's Office says they failed to obtain the correct permit and didn't follow NIH protocol for transporting biological material. In an emailed statement, the NIH says it was made aware of the incident and took proper precautions to protect the lab in Hamilton. The agency did not say whether the researchers were transporting the materials as part of their approved scope of work. NIH declined to comment further. In Columbia Falls, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Montana's tribes are losing their native languages. At least three indigenous languages in the state are considered critically endangered. Montana Public Radio's Victoria Traxler reports on a summit working to change that.
The Montana Early Childhood Tribal Language Summit isn't exactly like other conferences. There are keynote speakers and panels, but there are also stories and songs spoken in traditional languages. Educators, parents, state and tribal government representatives are here to find ways to revitalize and sustain Indigenous languages pushed to the brink of extinction. 75-year-old Peggy Myers is one of just roughly 60 fluent Cree speakers left on the Rocky Boy Reservation. As a child, she only spoke Cree, but as she grew older, that changed.
The longer I went to school, the longer I spoke, it became shameful. You know, I was ashamed to talk my language. And I was a feisty one.
Myers witnessed firsthand the loss of her language in their community as forced assimilation played out over the decades. But educators like Bert Medicine Bull, who teaches Northern Plains Sign Language, are working to sustain them.
What little I know, I learned it when I was living with my grandparents as a little boy. It's really important to have that. It's another form of communication.
At the summit, attendees organized plans to bolster language programs, shared curriculums, integrate more tribal languages into classrooms, and use new technology to help. Theron Small, an elder and Cree speaker from Rocky Boy, says the needle is moving in the right direction.
These younger ones, when they're speaking up and they're talking Cree to us, and we're there and we're listening, and that's telling us that, well, the elders must be doing something good to where they're speaking the language to us.
Today, Myers' message to those revitalizing their language is...
Akameimuk. Keep trying.
Reporting from Bozeman, I'm Victoria Traxler.
Wyoming Governor Mark Gordon signed an executive order Wednesday welcoming new data centers while asking state agencies to ensure they're developed responsibly. That means encouraging centers to pay the costs for increasing energy demand in the area and provide permanent jobs to Wyomingites. It also asks them to protect water and wildlife and be transparent. John Burroughs with the nonprofit Wyoming Outdoor Council says it's a good first step.
Our hope is that the framework that this establishes actually has some teeth to address the concerns that Wyomingites care about and are speaking up about.
The order itself does not change any policies, but state agencies now have 60 days to provide recommendations for changes and potential legislative actions. This comes as community members grapple with a growing number of data center proposals statewide. A wildlife management area in western Wyoming will add 370 acres thanks to action at a Wyoming Game and Fish Commission special meeting. The commission last week approved the acquisition of land adjacent to the Table Mountain Wildlife Habitat Management Area in Goshen County. Game and Fish manages the Table Mountain WHMA cooperatively with the Bureau of Land Management. The property is off County Road 55, located southeast of the WHMA. It includes 84 acres of associated water rights. A news release from Game and Fish says the parcel will expand and enhance wildlife habitat and allow for increased opportunities for the sporting public. A spokesperson said the property will remain available for agricultural production. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks hosts a virtual town hall today on top fishery concerns heading into the summer. Despite recent rains around the state, the summer heat is rapidly approaching, with low snowpack this past winter and a summer weather forecast that predicts hotter and drier weather than normal. Montana FWP is preparing a suite of tools to help protect fisheries across the state. Today at noon, FWP hosts a virtual town hall to discuss the tools and concerns going into the summer. The town hall will last an hour, features fisheries and water management staff, as well as FWP Fish Chief Adam Strainer. The virtual town hall starts at noon today via Zoom. To join the session, go to the FWP website, navigate to the news release section, and find this story. Attendees can raise their hands to ask questions. To watch a recording after it's over, you can go to FWP's YouTube channel. The University of Montana this past semester terminated one of its oldest graduate programs, a master's degree in literature. The English department, students, and UM faculty pushed back to no avail. Administrators say they had to make hard choices for the university's future. But as Montana Public Radio's Austin Amistoy reports, those choices have left some students wondering if they were heard at all.
In college, it can feel hard to slow down. Classes, studying, exams. For 23-year-old Josie Miller, this dirt path along Missoula's Clark Fork River is her refuge.
I think nature is just a very calming place to be, and a lot of times when I'm dealing with like the noise of society, being next to the river really helps ground me in what I do.
Miller spent a lot of time here this year. She and her peers in the University of Montana's English department learned in December administration intended to terminate one of its oldest graduate programs, its Master of Arts in Literature. Miller wrote letters. She helped organize rallies in support of the program. The faculty government voted overwhelmingly against terminating it. But less than 6 months later, the decision was finalized.
Like, that to me signals that this was already kind of a foregone conclusion, that they wanted to cut it, that they had their own vision for the university, and for some reason, literary studies is not in it.
University administration insists that was not the case. They say it was a difficult decision driven by finances, student interest, and the need to invest in growing programs. But now Miller and some of her colleagues and mentors are wondering how many more cuts UM can withstand and still hold on to its reputation as Montana's premier humanities university.
They didn't give us any heads up, so we kind of were hit with it pretty blindly.
That's Professor Eric Reimer, who directs the department's graduate studies in literature. He says he heard several explanations for the termination he found confusing or conflicting. Those included low enrollment, budget balancing, and a lack of sustainability. But Reimer says enrollment has been stable after taking a hit during the pandemic and matches other graduate degrees on campus. He says the program only requires a handful of teaching assistants, or TAs, to run, a relatively cheap expenditure compared to other degrees.
They're sacrificing a program of over 100-year history for basically one TA position.
Reimer acknowledges the program has had its struggles. Its final cohort will include fewer than a dozen students. But he says the end of this program is another chip in UM's reputation as Montana's destination school for students seeking advanced study of the arts, writing, and rhetoric.
We're waiting for our leadership to articulate how we can move forward and still think of ourselves as the quote-unquote flagship humanities institute in the state.
Provost Adria Lawrence, in charge of overseeing academics at UM, says that reputation still holds true. She notes UM has a strong undergraduate English degree, plus philosophy, history, environmental studies, and arts programs.
I would argue that the humanities is much bigger than one academic program.
Lawrence says changes to academic programs are common. Nearly 40 certificates, concentrations, and degrees are set to end this year at UM. But most of those are ground-up cuts recommended by faculty in those programs. The decision to end the graduate literature program was top-down, made by administration. That prompted intense pushback from the Faculty Senate, a body of professors that advises UM administrators. More than 80% of members recommended UM keep the literature graduate program. According to minutes from the April meeting, members said administration hadn't justified the decision to end the century-old degree. Student Alex Anderlich is finishing his literature master's degree and serves on a subcommittee of the Faculty Senate.
There has been frustration and fury and sadness.
Anderlich believes advanced literature studies have never been more important. As corporations invest heavily in AI and students increasingly fold it into their studies, he wonders whether future generations will have the opportunities he did to learn how to learn. That is, how to think critically and communicate.
We are really just shooting ourselves in the foot. We are blinding ourselves by divesting from the humanities.
Back along the Clark Fork, Anderlich's fellow student, Josie Miller, weighs the responsibility of being one of the last graduates from UM's Literature Master's program.
Because the last thing that I would want is to have a 100-plus-year legacy and on a downward turn. So I struggle a lot with the burden of that.
Her goal is to write the most impactful thesis she can in the year of school she has left. Reporting in Missoula, I'm Austin Amastoy.
The University of Montana holds Montana Public Radio's broadcast license, but MTPR is editorially independent. That's The Worm for this Thursday. Catch up with us tomorrow morning. We'll have another episode for you early birds then.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.